Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You are listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast brought to you by Birmingham Live. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Claret and Blue podcast. My name is Dan Rowitz and I'm joined this evening by Matt Kendrick. There's currently 100 people watching already. We're only 12 seconds in. This YouTube has been live for 15 minutes or so while I've set up. Came home. I'm working for my parents. So I've been to the game with my dad and my Mac said, oh, you've got to do a 30-minute update. I've just been sat around like an idiot trying to use my sister's laptop and she's not here and I don't have the password. So I look a little bit red on this camera. So I'm very warm, but buzzing with a win at Villa Park. We're not going to overanalyze this too much because that's not you and me, Matt, but I've had a lovely day at Villa Park. Have you enjoyed yourself?
I have, yeah. It was very pleasant. Parked easily, got away easily. What more do you want? Oh, we won as well. I couldn't have predicted a 3-0 after an hour. No, to be honest, I wasn't that confident in it. But as soon as the floodgates opened, you know, as soon as we got that breakthrough, just looked unstoppable, didn't we? I mean, Everton were very, very poor, I thought. Mm. But what's that noise happening?
Oh, let's hopefully just ignore it. It's my parents' old-fashioned clock in the house. It's just gone 9 o'clock. I thought
you'd opened your jewellery box or something as a little ballerina.
There is an old-fashioned jukebox thing here as well. I'm doing the best I can to it. I sort of chucked my laptop in my bag and said, I'll do it at my parents' because that'll be easier. I don't know what I was thinking, to be honest, next time I'm going home because it's been a nightmare.
You're painting your parents as being like some 80-year-old decrepit.
No, normal 50-year-old middle-aged adults. But I think it was a wedding gift. There's their wedding anniversary not so long ago, and it's still going. Every so often, the battery's on it going. It makes a really horrible noise. Anyway, back to the football. Let's try and do this in chronological order a little bit. When the team news came out, I actually saw Ashley Preece's tweet as I was walking to the ground, and he'd done a list of the players that he'd seen coming out of the corner flag restaurant. And obviously, if you read it normally, you'd see there's about 30 players in it. But because I was just walking to the ground, I was not really paying attention. I saw like Sinisalo, Steer. I was thinking, what formation's playing? What's this team we've put out? And I realised what the tweet was. So Villa stick with an unchanged side, apart from Martinez coming in for Steer, as most people expected. But still have a three at the back, which I wasn't quite sure whether that was just for Chelsea or whether that was kind of not a plan B for Villa, but you almost think of them as a 4-3-3 or nothing in years gone by. But we've all of a sudden got this option of going three at the back and playing two up front. And again, as much as, like you said, it wasn't a 3-0 game 45 minutes an hour in, three at the back looks good for Villa.
Yeah, man, I thought he'd try to crowbar in two of his signings. I thought it was a formation that tried to crowbar in Danny Ings and Twanzebe, but you know, it worked to the extent that Villa kept a clean sheet. Weird, isn't it? Because I don't want to dig out Matt Targi, but if you just compare and contrast the two wing backs today, and you know, I'm probably, you know, I know Matty Cash has scored that brilliant goal with his left peg, and bless him for coming to where I sit in the Trinity and running the length of the pitch to celebrate with us. That was very nice of him. But I thought he was good most of the game. You know, he was pinging that big diagonal a couple of times today, didn't he? From right to left. And I think he pinged one from left to right when they swapped flanks at some stage as well.
That was strange when they swapped flanks. I know that it's a minor thing and I'm not going to read too much into it, but because I said it to my dad during the game and he was like, oh, you see, you know, they're effectively playing wingers in a wing-back formation. You see wingers swap from time to time to go at the other full-back. It's like, yeah, but these are wing backs with, you know, very much one, or for Target specifically, very much one sided player. Like, I don't want to see Target playing right wing back too often. And I think somebody came screaming out the dugout. I think it might have been the new coach calling his man. Yeah, maybe the set piece coach came screaming out because they're right, switch now, switch back. It's like, all right, yeah, get back on your side and don't do that again.
Wasn't it mainly a switch that was born out of Matty Cash taking a long throw from the left anyway.
I think they just stayed out of position for too long. I was like, I'm not comfortable with this. Get back over there. But to be fair, and we'll talk about Leon Bailey in a sec, he was given man of the match on Sky, I think, I've seen on social media. You know, he's only played 20 minutes of the game. Yeah, he scored and he was good and we all get onto him. But I'd have said Cash for my man of the match. I know it's easy to say, yeah, he scored as well, so you're just giving it to the goal scorers. But like you said, I thought he was solid.
No, I mean, my standout players today, I thought Ings was good for his work rate. Mm-hmm. I thought he was probably our best defender in the first half, Danny Ings. He
dropped very deep at times, didn't he? Yeah.
Tracking back, you know, I think he saw him make a tackle in the right back area. Probably more sitting more deep than Cash and Konsa at that time when he came and tracked back. I thought Jacob Ramsey was very good again, very measured. Yes. Really, really wish he'd have clipped that one just inside the near post as Villa started to run riot. Cash and Bailey.
Bailey does what he wants, doesn't he, at this point? Play 20 minutes, come on, score direct from a corner. I don't think he's been given the goal officially, but I'm going to say it was going in anyway. Score from a corner, bang one in front of the hole, and celebrate like mad, and then I'm done now, I'm going off.
I've got a tight leg,
I'm going off, well, I'm done.
Yeah,
I was just saying, I'm at a 1950s house. That's very harsh on my parents' decor. It maybe does need a little bit of a refresh. I'm sorry, Dad, if you're watching this later on, but 1950s is harsh. It's very beige, though. I'll give you that.
It's a nice mug you're drinking out of. Nice 1950s mug you're drinking out of there as well.
It's Christmas themed. I'm getting on it early.
Oh, it's September, innit? I've got to give a shout out to my son's friend's dad, who I've just made to come and collect him from here rather than dropping him off home. He doesn't really like football particularly, but I thought I promised him if he hurried up and went and didn't stay and give me loads of chit chat on my drive, I'd give him a shout out. So he said, "Can I shout out Ginger Man Boobs," which is not his official name, but there you go. So promised I'd do it. Soccer. He's a big football fan. Soccer. What are we talking about, Leon Bailey? Did you want to go chronologically?
Oh, don't care at this point.
So we've got the first goal, Matty Cash. I thought it was a nice move, actually. Was it Douglas Luiz who slotted him in? Was it Ings and Luiz who combined down that flank?
Yeah, I think so. Watkins. Luiz seemed to burst forward in that right-sided central midfield role a few times just to get over on the overlap. Obviously McGinn going off changes things a little bit. I suppose we should mention that. And four substitutes. I don't know whether this has been cleared up anywhere, but I assume that...
concussion, wasn't it? McGinn. Do you know when Begovic made the save from Mings's header first half? I think McGinn went for the follow-up and got a bit of a bang in the head. So I think that's what's done it. I think
when he got a bit of treatment, obviously it's right in front of us on the Trinity, and the medics or the physios, whatever, gave him a tablet of some kind. I don't know, that was for headache or dizziness or blurred vision or something. He swallowed that down, carried on, and then went down a little bit later and signalled that he wanted to come off. Just assume that, I've not seen it anywhere, but assume that was a concussion sub, and that's why we ended up making four in the end. But as Dave Clifton says, we've got 100 million sat on the bench now, which the big conversation that we've had in the previous stuff we've done is, how do you get Buendia and Bailey and Ings and Watkins all on the same side? And the answer
you don't really get them in a 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, whatever you want to call it. So as much as that system can accommodate Twanzebe and can accommodate Watkins and Ings, I mean, Leon Bailey played left wing back, didn't he, when he came on? But at that stage of the game, there wasn't going to be much defending involved. But nice problems to have, to be honest. And, you know, Smith's taken a little bit of flack along the way during his time for not being a progressive coach. He's now showing that he can, you know, I'm not saying all of a sudden him switching to one different formation, you know, guarantees the progressive coach, but I think it just shows that he is prepared. He's prepared to chop things around and try different systems. And, you know, it worked to the point that we won the game today. I thought Everton were really... I mean, Everton had got a few players missing, hadn't they, as well? But they didn't really offer much, did they?
I wasn't bothered about Everton, really. There was nothing that... I was never really concerned about them at any point. I heard Smith on the radio on the way back, and he said, interestingly, he thought that the 5 minutes or so before Cash opened the score, and he thought that... I don't think he said that Everton were getting on top, but that was kind of their best spell, or they were getting a bit more of a control. And I thought the same, that I suddenly thought, this might not go the way we want, and it might kind of fizzle out. And that goal certainly changed it in terms of the atmosphere as well. I thought Villa Park was electric after that. And then obviously the following goals come. I've done a little cheeky tweet that it was 9 minutes in dreamland for Villa with the three goals coming in those 9 minutes. But you know, that, once that second went in, especially, I thought that's game over. There's no way Everton can come back from that. But even throughout the game, I just don't think they had enough to threaten. Really, Rondon's up front.
Yeah, I mean, Rondon, I think I say before the game, he's not a temp fate, but, yeah. You know, Rondon's not the world's biggest goal threat, is he? No Calvert-Lewin, no Richarlison, no Pickford in goal. And just thought he you know, Villa should be winning. I know, you know, I'm not delusions of grandeur, but Villa should be winning games like that. And the fact they ended up, well, we ended up winning it so convincingly towards the end was... it put the cherry on top of a very productive afternoon.
I think there was a lot made of their opening start, and they've got, I think it was 10 points from the first four, and how well they'd done. And I kind of say, yeah, Everton had a good start. But Villa on 7 points now after the same amount of games played. Is, you know, Everton had a good start, and you'd probably say Villa have had a good start then, to only be 3 points behind. But unless you're one of the elite, you don't, like us last year when we started the season, well, that doesn't last forever, does it? I know it's a cliche and it's very low-level analysis to say it, but Everton weren't going to keep that up forever, were they? They had a good record away from home. We'd been good at home this season. I think that's unbeaten in three now. They're good this season. We only played three. But still, you can only beat what's in front of you. But I just never felt that Everton were threatening enough. And I did think if we scored first, then we'd go on to win. And yeah, once that second went in, that was game over. And like you said, the third was the cherry on top of the cake. So a nice, comfortable evening at Villa Park for me. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, we'll leave the analysis more in depth to the guys on Monday, because not that I don't want to do it and I'm not capable of doing it, but I know that's not us either. Don't want to now. I've just enjoyed a good day at Villa Park. It's a clean sheet and three goals. I've had a nice time. That's as far as it goes for me at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night. I'm back home with a cup of tea.
I thought the Everton fans were a little bit quiet as well. And, you know, I know
that's not brilliant, to be fair.
No, 3-0 down. You're not going to expect much, but the away end emptied quite quickly as well, didn't it?
Mm.
Yeah, by the time the 5 minutes left, there were only about a third of the Everton fans back in there, but not that I was really fussed by then. You know what I found? I find really interesting. I was laughing with my nephew about this. Austin McPhee, he kind of just springs up as soon as
he appears out of nowhere, doesn't he?
I know that's his job. But he just springs up as soon as he's a throw-in or a corner. He's just there and he's barking orders. And I said, I wonder what he's like. He must really hate it when they do five-a-sides in training. You know, when they do set-piece drills, he must come into his element, but he must just sit there in a sulk if they're doing like no head height little knockabouts in training. But, you know, I suppose the proof, it's interesting in it, because as soon as we got a... Like Leon Bailey takes that corner, puts a bit of whip on it, and we scored a goal. Now, I'm not sure that Villa have found who their set piece taker is.
I think Douglas Luiz took a couple in the first half.
Douglas Luiz took one that was brilliant. He took a brilliant one that Mings tested Begovic from. Came out for another corner, and then he just played it along the floor to the first man. So, if you have got a set piece coach, you probably need to have. I'm not saying that Dean Smith changed his formation just to accommodate Leon Bailey, but you probably need somebody who can deliver properly.
There was a nicely worked set piece. I don't know who took the free kick. It was out on the right hand side, if I'm on the Trinity side, and they play it in towards, I think it was Target, and you kind of think, oh, what are they doing here? Like a sideways pass. I just get it in the box and he whips it in. Conte heads it down. Probably supposed to go to a forward to get a shot off. I think Mings knocks it on again and then Mings to Ings again over the bar. And you kind of think, again, low-level analysis to be sat in the ground, but they pass it sideways to Target. And I'm thinking, oh, I'll just get it in the box and then do a nice little routine. I think, oh, yeah, good work, but I like that. They don't know what they're doing.
It looked like there's some work went into it. What was I going to say? Brilliant dad joke. Do you see the dad joke that I tweeted before the game?
I tweeted a picture of Villa Park when I got there and said, right, I'll see you all in a few hours and I've got phone service again. I've not really checked my phone since. So no, I've not seen it. Do you want to crack it now?
And it genuinely wasn't me this time. It's not a kind of friend of a friend thing, but there's a bloke who sits in front of me with a couple of young kids. And one of the kids said, Dad, has Hercules got a bigger head? And his dad said, yeah, he loves himself now. I thought it was quite amusing. Anyway, the other thing that I wanted to say, and again, this was something I tweeted before the game, is hi-ho silver lining. What's your verdict on it? Because it don't really do anything for me.
Yeah, it's all right.
You can only sing two words to it. You change the silver lining to Aston Villa, you clap a little bit, and then it just rolls round again. It's just a bit of a dirge.
It rolls around to the chorus. No one really knows what's going on here until it comes back again. I suppose it gets people up for it a little bit. I'm not really bothered about it. I always associate it with Wolves. I don't know whether it's Wolves.
And I just find it a bit... I don't like to artificially manufacture an atmosphere either. And the atmosphere will build up Villa without having to be giving this little kind of prod.
There was a period, I think, after that, just before the players come out, they were still playing music and there was a round of LA, LA, LA going around. I know you don't really like that either, but I thought, turn the music off. Like, we don't need it. It's some like random pop song on here. Like, I'm sure we can make our own atmosphere here. But we're going off the off topic a little bit there. Talk to me about Leon Bailey then, the guy that comes on and plays when he wants, scores when he wants. I don't know whether it's as simple as say that he changed the game, but we do score all the goals when he's on the pitch, and he does look dangerous. He looks exciting, and from the little bits I've seen on social media while I was waiting for my laptop to load up, it seems like people are falling in love with him already, and he's becoming a little bit of a cult hero after about an hour of football he's played.
Yeah, I think we've just been crying out for him though, so we're so desperate to see him play. You know, maybe he only does arrive in 20-minute bursts, to be honest. But it was so good having us waited and waited. And we've all seen the little bits that he's done. You know, the bits that he's done in the Villa shirt so far. I mean, I loved last week when he's nutmegged somebody near the touchline, near the
news anchor. I think it was.
We've all seen his highlights reels as well from his time in Germany. And I think there's such a clamour for him that when he actually came on and within that brief cameo, you know, delivered the goods, it was brilliant. And you know, I've just seen an interview with him that he's given. I just watched it on YouTube, and he's saying, you know, touch wood, I think he got a slight muscle injury. I think he won.
I saw that he hit the ball too hard for the goal.
Yeah.
That's like a very rock and roll injury to get, isn't it? I scored too hard, I got injured.
You would think that a professional footballer would be able to withstand the rigors of kicking a ball. But he's
one of these ones that we look back on in future and go, that's why nobody took a punt on him, because he gets injured just kicking a football.
Well, he did give it a good old whack, to be fair. I thought that was a brilliant goal. I thought Ings's ball, you know, to just even think. I think Ings kind of played it half blind, I think. And Bailey's done the little header down and then just thought, yeah, have this. I'm just going to smash it. He just seems to have that little kind of bit of charm to him, doesn't he? You know, he seems like a really likeable fella. Obviously, scoring goals and winning games helps him become more likeable, but he just seems like a lovely fella.
So I suppose the question here is, and maybe this isn't one for 9 o'clock on a Saturday, and it requires a little bit more thought. If he is fit and ready to go, and it is just almost a precaution to bring him off at 3-0, the game is won, isn't it? If, you know, there's no point letting him play on from the 15 minutes and making any potential injury worse. So, yeah, get him off. He's done his job. That's fine by me. So if he's fit and ready to go and start next week in theory, do you start him now? Is he too dangerous and too much of a good option not to start? Or do you have to think, well, we played well against Chelsea, yeah, we lost, but we played well with the three at the back. We've won convincingly at home today with the three at the back. Do you do that again at Man United next week and go three at the back again and stick with this while it's working? Or do you think, no, we need to change it and get somebody like Bailey in from the start? Because unless Bailey's going to come and take Ings or Watkins' place as a number nine in a 3-5-2, which doesn't make sense to get him in, you've got to go to a 4-3-3, haven't you? So, if you were boss, we'll talk about Smith in a sec, what would you do?
It's a really difficult dilemma, I think, because, like you said, I don't think you can get him in that system. I'm not sure you're going to go. You know, I don't think Target will start next week, if I'm being honest. I think Ashley Young might be back in there.
Really? Why?
If he does. I just don't think he. I thought he was really disappointed today. Just disappointing today. I don't think he looked fit. I thought he gave the ball away too often. Did you? Why did you? Have I seen that? Am I the only one who's seen that?
I didn't think anything of him, really. I didn't think he was poor. I didn't think he was great. I didn't think he did anything wrong, though. I think he came off for a tactical reason. I thought you were going to suggest that he's injured, and I've just not seen it. But I'll play Target again next week. I think he's trying to change team, I think, isn't it? That's what I do. I don't, while it's working, I don't think you change it for the sake of it. But I know Smith said it's his word specifically, but it's horses for courses, isn't it? And you change your side for the opponent, so I understand that. But if 3-5-2 is working at the moment, you do that against Man United and you've got someone like Bailey to come on for half an hour again. And at the moment, that seems to be working. So like you said, maybe Bailey is that player at the moment where he's fit enough to play half an hour and comes in and does the job rather than start games and fizzle out.
Yeah, well, whatever he does, I don't think Bailey will be playing left wing back against Manchester United.
Oh, no.
At Old Trafford. So in that case, Smith will have to, if he wants to accommodate him, he'll have to change the formation. I don't really see that happening either, because I don't know which one. I mean, I thought Watkins was probably the quieter of the two out of him and Ings, but I don't know which one Smith would drop to accommodate him. But we'll see. I mean, before then, we got Chelsea, haven't we, in the cup? And yeah. I'm not sure. It'd be interesting to see how strong Smith decides to go with that. Now, in the early rounds of the cup, he normally makes up to 9 or 10 changes, doesn't he? I don't think he'll do that. I think he'll probably do a mix and match team with, you know, probably make about 4 or 5 changes from today for Tuesday. Mm. But yeah, I think he probably will go very similar next weekend, because I think now he's hit upon that formation and Villa have produced 2 decent performances with it. I don't think he'll be wanting to change it too quickly. So, and equally, well, you know, he's got a ready-made excuse to say Bailey got a slight muscle injury. We'll have him as an impact sub again next week.
Let me interrupt there. And the reason we do these live is because we get people in the comments who know more than we do and are more switched on than we are at this time of night, saying that Twanzabi can't play next week against his parent club.
That's an excellent point from people who've done more research than us. So,
I mean, if I'd have thought about it, I would have realised. But yeah, at this point in time,
we don't need to think about it.
We've got Villa fans here who are happy to jump in and tell us where we're wrong. So yeah, Twanzabi won't play next week against Man United as his parent club.
That's
so
all over me.
You either play 3 at the back with Courtney Hawes, which instantly I'm shivering with anticipation, thinking that's a bad idea. So I personally wouldn't go with that. So it almost goes default to 4-3-3 next week for me. And Bailey comes in, problem solved. I wouldn't want Courtney Hawes playing against Man United. But I know we'll talk about Mings, he was already in a second. We are going around in circles a little bit here. But last week people were saying, oh, get Mings out of the team, got Courtney Hawes to come in and replace him. And I'm thinking Courtney Hawes isn't... He's no disrespect to him, but he's fourth choice centre-back for a reason, isn't he? Like, I wouldn't be starting him against Man United personally.
No, I agree. I don't think Smith will play a 3 with Courtney Hawes in it, to be honest. So I think it will, you know, I'm glad people have pointed that out to us, because I think it will revert to a 4. But then that's, again, I suppose it depends on McGinn's injury, whether whether McGinn comes back in. I think it probably does go to a 4-3-3. Does that mean that one of Watkins or Ings does drop out, or does it mean that Watkins plays off one of the flanks, Ings plays down the centre, and then we have Leon Bailey or one of the alternatives? But yeah, I forgot about that, to be honest, that Twanzabi was ineligible. So
there's a few people
lots
in the comments
of choices doing that. I know it sounds a bit of a cliche, but it's nice problems to have, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a few people saying, you know, it's hot, it's unfair on Hawes, he's never really let us down. Some people saying that sure he'll play Hawes and stick with the 3 at the back. So yeah, if the formation kind of wins, then Courtney Hawes does come in. But if Smith's ready to be adaptable and change things for the opposition, and he'd rather kind of have Bailey as this wild card coming in to start and changing the formation to not surprise Man United, but it's good to be flexible, then yeah, maybe they do go with that. I just the thought of Courtney Hawes playing in a back 3 away at Old Trafford makes me a bit nervous.
No, agreed. I mean, the other thing I was going to mention was, am I right in thinking that Buendia and Martinez landed this morning?
Yeah, we talked about this on the way there, and I assume Villa, well, obviously Villa would have known that was the arrangement from the start anyway, and kind of made a big deal, didn't they, about, oh, they'll only miss one game, they'll definitely be back for Everton. So them getting back this morning is almost irrelevant, because I'm not going to be jet-lagged in Croatia, although it's not a long flight. Might have been a bit tired and gelling in with the squad again, but Buendia, I said in the preview, there's not really any need essentially to play him, because we've got so many creative options anyway, and he doesn't even come off the bench today, your record signing. But Emi Martinez was always going to come straight back in, wasn't he? Because, you know, goalkeeper's a bit different, and he's number one, so he's come in, kept a clean sheet. He only arrived in Birmingham today, and he finishes the day with a clean sheet. What more can you expect?
Probably could have caught up on a bit of kip during the game as well, and couldn't he?
He could have stayed in Croatia, to be fair.
Hardly troubled, was he?
Yeah. There's a few comments. I don't really know why we're doing this, but there's a few comments asking, do Villa fans hate Man United? Do we hate Man United? I'm sick of losing to them all the time. I know that.
Not as much as we did. Crikey, used to be like early 90s when Villa were on the brink of actually challenging to win the title. And United beat us to the title. Was it 90?
It's first season of Premier League.
I think 92, 93. And I probably blame them for... I thought Villa were... I was young and naive then. Used to have a nice parting, not as big as this one. but I thought back then that Villa were on the brink of something, and I blamed United because it was that it was like nip and tuck the race for the title that year. And you were just supposed to hate them, and then they took Dwight York off us. And do you know what I mean? It was hatred then. I think it's been hard to hate them as much. Well, some people probably hate them as much as they've ever done, but it's been as hard to hate them when they've not been direct rivals. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been challenging top four. We've been trying to stay in the Premier League or get in the Premier League for the last 10 years or whatever it might be. So I don't know. I don't particularly like them.
I think of them as any other club, really. They're not Villa. They're the opposition to Villa. They're annoying. They annoy me. The referee decisions that go for them and the penalties and stuff, that winds me up. The most recent memories I can think of as we're talking about Man United is the Konsa one in Project Restart, with that penalty that was given, which wasn't a penalty. The 2010 League Cup final, that's more for Phil Dowd, really, that I hate. And I remember Makeda scoring that goal against us, and it was like his first goal, and I don't even know what he's doing anymore now, whether he's even still playing. It's just did that one thing disappeared. I don't really care about Manchester, to be honest, or Man United, sorry.
I remember being in snobs when they won the European Cup in 99, was it? And lots of people celebrating in the middle of a bar club in Birmingham. And I thought, nah, I'm not having that.
No, I'm not having that.
But no, they're just another team, aren't they, now, to me?
Yeah. Before I ask you the last couple of questions, can you stop fiddling with that pen or whatever it is?
Sorry, mate. Sorry, I'm
keep dropping it. It's annoying me.
Hungry, to be honest. I'm back on Slimming World, so I just need to go and eat something.
Yeah, not a pen, lunch.
I'm not going to eat the pen. I wonder what it looks like. I've ate the pen. It looks like I've chewed the top of it. Anyway.
I wanted to ask you about Tara Mings, and with people who've watched our podcast in the last couple of weeks that have seen me tweet about Tara Mings many times. So, you know, I don't want to go into it too much, but you're the only person pretty much on Claret and Blue that I've not asked about because you've not seen you for a while. So,
yeah, I want to get your week after the Chelsea game.
Did we do one after Chelsea?
I think we did, didn't we? Did we?
I don't know. We definitely skipped a game, didn't we? Did we not? Oh, I don't know. Actually, I don't know. Did we speak about Tara Mings there? Did I ask you about it?
I don't ask me anyway. Go on.
If we did one after Chelsea, I would have asked you about it. Anyway, just less about the... I don't want to speak about the error last week. I want to ask about how he's bounced back today with a clean sheet and what you thought of his performance, because obviously, again, social media was rife with discussion on Tara Mings this week about he's not good enough, blah, blah, blah. So just your opinion on Mings and what you thought of him today, because I saw a comment earlier, I've only seen one, because we've not talked about saying that he was a colossal defender today. So if people want to leave their comments on Mings as well, get them in, and I can flash them up on screen. I've given my opinion many times. Alfresco says here, Mings immense. So, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought the back three were largely untroubled, to be honest. There was a couple of moments, but it's weird because I think Mings, in a three, thinks he can position himself a little bit further forward because he's got that support of Konsa and Twanzebe behind him. Yeah, I thought he was... I thought he was solid, but I think he largely is solid most of the time. To be honest, I think people he makes errors, doesn't he? He makes errors because he wants to play. He wants to play football the right way. But yeah, I thought he was the Mings that we know he's capable of. I think he still is and always has been before he got the armband, a proper leader. And he never shies away from things. So, yeah, good. But Tyrone Mings, people saying he's immense and he's class and he's, you know, unbeatable today. That's what he is. That's what he can be. You know, and I think over a 38 game season, you'll probably find that 33 games, he's like that. Mm. But you'll see the five games because he'll underhit a back pass or he'll be casual in possession. But I've seen some great centre-halves down Villa over the years. None of them are without a mistake in them. None of them. Even the Lord God, our Saviour himself, you know, could occasionally make a mistake. It was very, very infrequent. But I think this probably flies in the face of what I've said by having a moan about Target. But I think we should be, I'm not saying you don't criticise people, but I think we should celebrate what we've got a lot more, really. I think these half the Premier League would love Tyrone Mings in their ranks. We're lucky enough to have him. So
yeah, we made a point of it last week. I'll just check. We didn't do a Chelsea post-match podcast last week. We did it on the Monday, and we did like an hour of chat. I mean, that was me, James and Ash.
I wimped out because I wasn't feeling very well.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. We just didn't do one, did we, for several different reasons. I think Ash was getting a train late or whatever it was. But yeah, like we said, you can criticise, and you can criticise a performance. That's absolutely fine. But when it reaches into abuse and stuff, that's why we point stuff like that out. It's just some of the stuff we saw on social media this week was weird. Compilations of his mistakes over his time at Villa and stuff like that. I just don't understand. If you're a Villa fan, support the Villa players. That's as far as it goes for me. And on that same vein, support the manager. There's been, again, Dean Smith out stuff this week and reports that he's got to pick up form over the next few weeks or he's going to lose his job. And it's like, what?
This is on social media and it's not real life, is it?
Yeah, I know, but this is what I mean. But this podcast is on social media. This is the world we're living where these things come up and, you know, you'll hear all this stuff. And we've touched on it in this podcast anyway, but Smith's, you know, tactically inept and it doesn't know what to do if Grealish isn't there and all these kind of things. And we've got the guy coming out with two different formations this year and a bench that's really solid and looking like we're finally finding a bit of a groove now. So we said this month was going to be a test, played well against Chelsea but lost, won today, cup game coming up, and then Man United and Spurs before another international break. And if Villa come out of those games with a couple of points, you know, or three or six if we're in dreamland, then things are, you know, a lot brighter for Villa. And I don't know what people expect when we see this Dean Smith out stuff and you need another manager to get you to the next level and all that. It's just, we've had year-on-year improvement, and yeah, I don't know how many more times we can talk about stuff like this on the podcast while we're doing well at the moment. What's the point? I don't know why I've even brought this up, basically.
You know, listen, people are entitled to think what they think, aren't they? People have different standards. People have different reasons for going on social media. You know, sometimes if you can shout the loudest with the most controversial opinion in the room, it gets attention for you, doesn't it? So just, I don't know, you go to the match with your dad and your granddad and you chat to them. And I think, you know, if you have a reasonable idea of what you expect and what you want and what you demand. And if somebody is appalling, somebody's really bad, you'll be honest enough to say it. If somebody's fantastic, you'll be honest enough to celebrate it. Not everybody is of the same rational mind, are they? Do you know what I mean? So I don't, you know, take it with a pinch of salt, to be honest. You know, there'll be lots of people on here who think we speak nonsense. And
yeah, of course. That's fine. Yeah, that's fine. Supermark says, get Smith out for a curry and a couple of beers. I love that. That's a good comment. The last one I wanted to touch on before we leave, because we've reached our half an hour mark on a Saturday evening, if I can find it. It's before the Ming stuff. Bear with me, everybody who's watching along live. I can't find it, but it was funny. But I know what it was. I don't know who said it, so apologies. Like I said, is it true that Matt Kendrick only comes on the podcast when Villa win? Where have you been, Matt?
I wasn't very well last week. I think it was, I don't know whether it was a little bit of seasonal disorder, you know, because the nights are getting dark, aren't they now?
It's very dark now. I know it's half nine, but coming back in the dark, I'm not used to that. It should still be sunny.
Yeah, well, I think I had a bit of a mix. I mean, I don't want this to turn into a kind of consultation with you, like GP Rowlandson, but I got a bit of hay fever and I got a bit of IBS. Too much information, I know, and it was all getting too much for me. So perhaps Villa winning is the only tonic.
Yeah.
So more of it, please. Just what the doctor ordered.
Before we go, nice retro shirt. We've not coordinated to both wear a blue 90s away shirt, but yeah, good choices.
Yeah, I don't want to show you the AST computers on it. It's a bit mouldy, yellow. It's a bit yellowy from the loft. So yeah, you just see my lovely bald head and the top half of my shirt.
Well, I tried a couple on this morning before I left and thinking, oh, what shirt shall I go with today? And some of them were a little bit tighter than they were a few months ago. So I think I need to go to the gym or something to get into some of the shirts.
Was that Benjamin's Slimming World?
No, I don't live here now, do I? I'm not going to come all the way down Zoe in to go to Slimming World with you.
Come with me. It's brilliant. Just get part of ladies tutting at you if you put a pound on. Honestly,
get that at home. Don't need to go out to it. Do you remember once when we said we should go for a run? Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that.
You said we should start doing some exercise together. I think this was in the first lockdown that you and me should meet up because we live close and go walking or running together. That never happened, did it?
Can you imagine me turning up with my headband and my wristbands on? and my leg warmers.
I'm like Leon Bailey. I can only do 2 minutes and I get a tight calf and I have to come off. Should we call it a day there? Is anything or any other shout outs or any other nonsense you want to get through?
No, I didn't get accosted by anybody today.
Well, cool.
A bit disappointed.
Do everyone want to mention this? I can imagine the comments where I had, you know, when someone recognises you, but they don't come over or say anything, but they just like look at you and go like, oh, look, that's, and then speak to somebody. I had that happen to me today and I thought, that's probably somebody going, oh, that's that geezer off the podcast who talks rubbish to their mates, yeah, and just walked off. And I thought, that's disappointing.
If they
recognised me, I'd rather they just said, like, oh, that's that guy from the podcast. Oh, you're right. I had the guy on my row come up to me again and say, I watched the podcast last week and you mentioned me, blah, blah, blah. So he's had another mention this week. So I'll speak to you at Wolves, mate, when we see you next. But yeah, we'll call it a night there. I can go home and go back to my actual house and get this tin pot set up out. Next game, I'm not doing this again. I'm not coming back to the 1950s for the podcast. I'm going to go back home.
You take the clock with you, though.
Yeah, that was embarrassing, wasn't it, that going off? If we weren't doing this live, I'd have cut that out, but this is the problem with live content. Thank you very much for all the comments and tuning into this podcast. The 3 o'clock games that we've had when we've done these afterwards, we've had like a couple of hundred viewers, which was less than obviously people at games, but for some reason, this nighttime one, we've got 500 people still watching at this time. So that's brilliant that people are tuning in. Thank you very much for that. Matt, thank you for coming on and battling through your high fever and other issues to come and sit with us. Massively appreciate it. Like I said, thanks for all the comments for correcting us on Tu and Davey. We'll be back with a more in-depth podcast on Monday. I believe James Rushton will be hosting that to actually speak about football for half an hour or so rather than absolute nonsense like us. Before I say thank you very much again one more time, we'll see you again soon. Loads of comments still coming through. Thank you very much. Thank you. Well done.
Villa. Cheers, lads.
Up the Villa. Thank you very much and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Claret and Blue, an Aston Villa podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, then please do let us know. We love hearing your feedback. We'll be back soon with another episode, but until then, up the Villa.